Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of December 20th through 27th. This is our Christmas podcast and the last podcast for the year 2010, in which we interviewed Father Guido Geckel, who is the Undersecretary for the Catholic Near Eastern Welfare Association. He was previously the Director of the Pontifical Mission for Palestine. So we talk a bit about his work there, including some of the customs that go on in the Holy Land this time of year. I met with Father Guido at his offices here in New York.
Father Guido, perhaps you could describe your work. From 1997 to 2004, you were the director of the Pontifical Mission for Palestine. Maybe you can describe that work for our listeners.
You know, the Pontifical Mission for Palestine was an organization that shortly after, you know, the founding of the State of Israel came to the rescue of Palestinian refugees, because there were 800,000 refugees at the time. And so the church set out this mission to reach out to them, because many of the Palestinians were also Christians, and so to reach out to them. And we were organized basically first from Lebanon, and then slowly on an office was established in Jerusalem, and then in Jordan. And so the three offices for the Pontifical Mission for Palestine, in, you know, to take care basically of the region, the whole region, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, the Holy Land, of course, you know, Israel, Palestine, and in order to, you know, to support the churches, one, and secondly, also to do humanitarian aid. Now, during the time that I was there, from 1997 to 2004, the Second Intifada happened, which is the big uprising against Israel by the Palestinians. Very, very critical moment in the history of the country. And much of the work at that time was to take care of the victims of all the shooting. And, you know, many of the houses were destroyed and people had all of a sudden lost their home, you know, etc. So we needed to take care of them. One of the main things at that time that we did was actually having a labor-intensive community development project, which was geared in order to help provide work for jobs for the people, because you know when you are in a critical situation of you know, of a war, you immediately think, oh, people can't get food. But I discovered at the time food was less of a problem. It was basically most of the men lost their jobs, they couldn't go to work, and all the same they needed, you know, some activity in order to release the tension at home. So that was a very, very important part. You know, in that time also, what happened was all the different Catholic organizations that were working in the Holy Land began a closer collaboration together, so much so that we, in a committee, Catholic committee, you know, was formed, which is up to today, they're meeting regularly in order to compare who is doing what, so that everybody is aware of who's helped and who's not helped, and nothing falls through the cracks. So that's basically, you know, what we are doing. And of course, we are helping with schools. We are helping, especially now, with a lot with youth activities, because it's very difficult for the young people in the Holy Land, you know, to have meaningful activities. And so sports facilities, youth movements, etc. We really want to encourage that, because if the youth has nothing to do, they go into, you know, into politics, etc. And we want to avoid that.
What, there was just an article recently, I believe, in the New York Times about the exodus of Christians from Iraq as a result of the conflict there. We also have read about, and we've written about in the magazine, about some of, because of these factors you cite, Christians leaving the Holy Land. Is that still an issue? People are leaving because of these difficulties?
Of course, you know, a lot of people want to leave because of all sorts of factors. You know, I think one of the main factors is, of course, that, you know, there's so much tension that kids can't focus on their studies. And so the education system, although it's good, they can only absorb so much because of the tension. So the parents very often would like to get the children away from the violence. and to make sure that they have a proper education. The Palestinians actually were, as are among all the Arab people, probably the most educated people. Education was always very, very important for them. You know, it's the way out of poverty. And they saw that, and they have been very influential in many parts of the Middle East. This continues in the Intifada. That's why, you know, many say, you know, if I have an opportunity to send my children abroad, I will. And many, of course, have, you know, relatives now in Nicaragua, in Chile. I mean, just in Bethlehem, from Bethlehem alone, there are 300,000 Bethlehemites in Chile. The contacts are there, so it's easy for them actually to go abroad. It was easier for the Christians in the past. Now it has also become very easy for Muslims as well to go. But it's, you know, it's impoverishing the land in many ways.
You mentioned Bethlehem, and of course we're a week before Christmas here. Perhaps you can just talk about what it's like there this time of year, what some of the customs are.
You know, Bethlehem, of course, preparing always for the feast by the entrance of the patriarch, the Latin patriarch, into Bethlehem. And I've been privileged to represent, you know, our organization and the donors, you know, at this celebration, you know, which basically starts on the 24th in the morning with a procession by motorcade, which meets that at the border of Bethlehem and Israeli police on horseback. Then they are officially greeted by the mayors of the neighboring towns of Beit Zahur and Beit Jala. You know, they come to greet officially the patriarch. Then they go through the checkpoints, and, you know, which is actually for the first time I went through the checkpoint there, which is normally, you know, off limits for normal people, but, you know, with the motorcade we were supposed to go there, and you see these high walls, you go right through it. It's awful, but right in the middle of it we stopped, and, you know, the Israelis come and take pictures of the whole procession, you know, and then all of a sudden the Palestinian police comes, and they come. In the past they were always on horseback, small horses. This time they came with little scooters. Last year, for the first time, they came with scooters. And so then they process into Bethlehem. And that's one big celebration for the whole of Bethlehem. Thousands of people on the street, people from neighboring towns all trying to come. You know, Palestinians all coming there and greeting the patriarch and see the whole motorcade going by. And it's a big festivity, really, for them. And then they go towards the Nativity Church, and just in front of the Nativity Church, you know, they're greeted by the mayor of Bethlehem and the whole council and all the, you know, the important people. Remember, the Palestinian people, or the whole Middle East, actually, it's very tribal. So the chieftains, you know, of all the tribes, they're all there. And, you know, this you sense very much also in this celebration, you know. All these important dignitaries are there, you know, representing their different groups and greeting the patriarch. And then they go in a procession into the Nativity Church. And then the solemn Vespers begins, and the stations of the, you know, the Franciscans, who are the guardians of, in a way, of the holy sites always. They go to different stations, the different grottos, because the Nativity Church consists of, you know, the main church building. Below that is are grottos. There's, of course, the Grotto of the Nativity, but there are other grottos, and one is the grotto where St. Jerome is supposedly have translated, and, you know, the Bible and the Vulgate, and where he has lived. You know, but there are more grottos like that. And actually the whole country is full of grottos. It's always been part of it. So then these grottos, because it's a kind of a network of grottos, goes into a neighboring church, which is the Church of St. Catherine, which is a modern church, which is actually the section of the Nativity Church for the Latin Rite, because the big basilica belongs basically to the Greek Orthodox Church, and a section to the Armenian Apostolic Church. So when we, you know, have these Vespers, we go into the Latin Church, and then, you know, and then afterwards there's a big procession downstairs in all the grottos with the Franciscans. Until later at night at 11 o'clock, we start first again with the Matins, you know, the prayer of readings, you know, basically the church always has. And that is then, you know, followed up by the Mass, a big solemn Mass, which is broadcasted, you know, worldwide. And I will be in that procession as well, be at the right hand of the patriarch. I have the honor there to represent, you know, our donors and our organization. Then after that is over, then the patriarch goes again procession through all the little grottos, you know, everywhere is a prayer is said and a little scripture reading said. So this ends by about 2:30. Then we vest again for another Mass, and we have a Mass in the grotto downstairs. So that by 3 o'clock, so it has been a long day.
Is it 3 o'clock in the morning?
3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. You start at 11 o'clock in the morning, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, you finally get to bed. And then the next morning, you have another Mass for the Arab community also. You know, actually, the Arab Mass for the Arab community in the morning, the Christians there, that's, to me, that is more of a highlight, really, than the midnight Mass, because it's really, you sense a community spirit. You see, with the celebration of the midnight Mass, you have all the dignitaries there, you have the president there, and you know, political figures, etc., always there. And then, so they're all sitting through Mass. They are not Christians, they're Muslims, etc., but they're sitting there. And then at the point of the kiss of peace, everybody disappears. And so all of a sudden, the church is half empty, you know, sort of. But the other Mass in the morning, where all the Christians are there, church is packed, and it's all in Arabic, and you just sense, you know, this wonderful Christian community, you know, really celebrating Christmas and enjoying being together, you know, celebrating the birth of the Lord.
And these are people who mostly live in Bethlehem and the outer
community? Yes, these are basically people that live in Bethlehem, and maybe, you know, some people from the south, because, you know, Bethlehem is very isolated. First of all, the people from Bethlehem usually have not the freedom to travel, say, for instance, to Jerusalem, which is only about 5 miles away. They need a special permit, and most of them won't get that permit. Many of the people in Bethlehem and the neighboring towns, it's like, you know, Bethlehem has on one side Bejala and the other one's Beit Zahur. It's really like one big town. Many of these people there have never been to Jerusalem. They can't go to Jerusalem. And from the Israeli side, they can't go. They have no permission to get into Bethlehem. Sometimes they give permits. Sometimes they don't give permits. So it's always very tricky. And the people from the northern part of the West Bank, it's very, very difficult to get to Bethlehem through all sorts of checkpoints, etc. And it's very discouraging, therefore. And so it mainly concentrates around people in Bethlehem and the neighboring towns.
You mentioned having to go through the checkpoints and the wall. So the wall that's been written about, that has been built by the Israelis, that is kind of a major structure there.
That's major structure around the town, basically. Bethlehem is really surrounded by the wall. It has one exit towards the south, towards the southern part of the Palestinian territories. And people have to go down south in order to get up north and through the Jordan Valley. So it's rather complicated, but it dominates very much. And it's terrible. People really have difficulties even to go to Jerusalem, you know, if they would like to go so close by. And it's tragedy that here, you know, two people, instead of living together in peace, have to create a wall in order to keep them from fighting.
Mm-hmm. I understand until fairly recently, maybe until today, there are people engaged in work, farming, shepherds, that the same kind of a work that you might have seen in the day of Christ's birth. Is that true? Is there still people doing that kind of work?
Oh, yes, there's, you know, I mean, it's the Palestinians, many of them it's a farming community. Mm-hmm. So apart from the towns, but most, you know, you have the farmers, you have got their olive groves and et cetera, and other farming that's going on. I remember once, you know, talking to an Italian priest who was a member of the Latin Patriarchate and who had been there since 1926 in the country. And I said, "Oh, Father Dominic, what's the most striking thing about this country? He didn't have to think very long. He said it was exactly as like at the time of Jesus, except the uniforms have changed. And, you know, going through the country, driving through the country, where you go north of Jerusalem or south, you know, you get very much the impression life has been going on for years like that. Very simple people. Unfortunately, we sometimes, you know, when we talk about Palestinians, we have these images of terrorists or something in the back of our minds. They're the most, first of all, I've told, they're one of the most educated people, but they're also the most simple people, you know, farmers, poor farmers, and, you know, who just want a, you know, simple lifestyle, who have basically good relationship with others. I feel, you know, over the years, that they have been, you know, hijacked by some ideologies which are not theirs. And that's the unfortunate thing. You know, big parts of it, you know, are very, you know, peaceful, peace-loving. I've come to really treasure them as wonderful people. And on the other side, you know, Israelis. You know, wonderful Israelis too. I've got very good Israeli friends, very good Jewish friends. But there again, you know, you have some ideologues and who, come what may, just are try to destroy or try to, you know, get their way.
Maybe finally we can just end by talking about your work here at the Catholic Near East Welfare Association, where in your offices here in New York. You've been here since 2004. Maybe you can talk about what your work here involves.
You know, Catholic Near East Welfare Association is a very old foundation, which was founded in 1926. It was basically a bringing together of a lot of different organizations, Catholic organizations that were all, you know, working with the refugees and the people displaced because of the First World War, as a result of the First World War. People who were also interested in ecumenism. Of course, ecumenism then was something different. We were trying to get the Orthodox, you know, returned to the Catholic Church. Now, of course, we are talking about we are one church. And so ecumenism is bringing our relationships together and see how we could actually become one church together, you know. It's a different perspective. And this is part of, you know, what Catholic Near East Welfare Association is supposed to do. But it's a wonderful organization that really tries to support the Eastern churches, which means the not just the ones in union with Rome, but also, you know, the other ones. For instance, you know, the Pontifical Council for Christian Unity in Rome, Cardinal Caspar at the time, you know, said, please help us educate many of the Orthodox priests, because it's very difficult to have a dialogue with people who are not educated. So we are, for instance, providing, you know, help to train them so that we will have partners. And we then will also help, of course, with formation of clergy and novices and building churches and, you know, helping with humanitarian aid as well, hospitals, clinics, orphanages, schools, etc. It's a wonderful work which, unfortunately, is not so well known. Sometimes, you know, I've been preaching about Catholic Near East and showed them the magazine, and people come to me and say, wow, it's the best kept secret of the Vatican. And I think it's true. I can honestly say I'm very, very proud of, you know, what the organization stands for. And we're always seeking to work together with other Christian Catholic organizations. If others do one particular job, we will try and find something different. If what we are doing, they want to do, we pass it on to them, so that we can do the things that fall through the cracks. So we are very flexible. It's not static, you know. It's in that way, it's a challenge, you know, all the time. You know, whether we are in Ethiopia, Eritrea, or the whole of the Middle East, where we have three offices, or in India, where we have a large office, you know, we have, for instance, sponsorships of over 30,000 kids and 4,000 seminarians, 7,000 religious, and etc. So, you know, it's It keeps us very, very busy.
Well, we will share, perhaps we'll link to your website and give some more information on your magazine on our website. But we want to thank Father Guido for spending a few minutes with us.
I mean, it was a great joy, actually, talking to you, Tim, and especially, and I'm very pleased because I, you know, have a good relationship with Father Drew Christensen. I have very, very fond memories, you know, every time we met in the United States, and a couple of times that I've actually visited American House here too as well. So it's a great honor, and you know, really thank you very much for actually coming by and interviewing me.
I want to thank you for joining us this week for our podcast and wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And again, if you want to learn more about the Catholic Near Eastern Welfare Association, you can check our website or go to cnewa.org. They publish the magazine One. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.